Our gospel text for this morning on the second Sunday of Epiphany is in itself an epiphany. Now, if you look at your bulletin, you notice, and you probably already knew the definition of epiphany as an appearance or manifestation, especially of a divine being, a perception of essential nature, meaning of something, an intuitive grasp of reality through something as an event, usually simple or striking, an illuminating discovery, realization, or disclosure. Sometimes we talk about the light coming on in our brain, the light bulb flicking on, that kind of epiphany, that aha moment, the, oh, now I see it. From the beginning of John's gospel, everyone's trying to see Jesus, trying to figure out who he is. Everyone's trying to get a glimpse of him, not just physically, but intellectually, spiritually, psychologically. Of course, so are we. So we look and listen intently as John the Baptist identifies Jesus at his baptism and what follows our reading today. But in this season of Epiphany up until Lent, the first Sunday of March, so in these next few weeks we'll have the common thread that will run through our worship services, this statement, we see Jesus. And even though all of us have eyes and all of us here have sight, some better than others and some aided by things like this or contact lenses, we don't all see the same thing. We want to see Jesus, but let's be honest, we are often blinded by our presumptions of Jesus. One of the things that bothers me a great deal, and I believe it bothers you as well, is that so many Christians in our day presume to know Jesus, it seems, better than Jesus knows Jesus. They know how Jesus would vote, or how he'd feel about welfare, or any of the great issues of our day. They presume to know so much about Jesus to have had so many epiphanies, and in my cynicism, and oh, by the way, I think I have confessed to you that I am a cynic. In my cynicism, it feels like what is really going on here is simply a magnification of their own wants and desires. But wait, I do the same thing. And probably you as well. We see Jesus in our own image through our own set of lenses, and we all do it, so perhaps our starting point ought to be honesty about that. Ready to confess it, less condemning when others do it. And it seems that our gospel text for today, as I read this and compared notes with my brother who is preaching this same text in a congregation in Nebraska today. He's not generally a preacher, happened to be an elder in his church, and there are pastors in Ecuador, and so my brother John is preaching this as well. And one thing we both noticed in this text is that of John the Baptist. And now it would seem that if anyone knew Jesus or could see Jesus, it was John the Baptist, who points to Jesus and says, "Behold the Lamb of God," sees something in Jesus that others weren't seeing. John's a popular religious leader and prophet of the day. And surely John knows Jesus intimately and can see him plainly, but notice that twice in the text, twice, I think, for emphasis, John says, I didn't know him. My whole ministry was anticipating him, but I didn't really know him. John stood there as the voice of one crying in the wilderness, seeing that God was about to bring something new into the world to transform the world, but he can't quite get his mind around it. He can't quite see it. He doesn't really know it. He can point to it, but can't really see it. I love this refreshingly honest statement of John. I did not know him. Because it resonates with me. I'm still growing, I think, in my understanding of Jesus, trying to keep my eyes open as I can to what I need to learn about what it means to, as our motto says, to model Jesus. And I believe that you're doing it as well. I see you going about your life, teaching, practicing medicine with the sick, providing comfort and care to the dying, building, counseling, coaching, serving the needs of those around you, going to school, serving customers, doing what you're doing, maybe not quite sure why you're doing it, but seeking to follow Jesus, even when you don't fully understand Jesus. We'd be in good company with John the Baptist. Like John, who stands in the wilderness, hoping and striving to better understand the world, but yet can't quite name this one whom he senses is changing the world, his whole ministry pointing toward Jesus, and yet declares, I didn't even know him. Then in verse 34 comes this declaration by John that we might say is an epiphany statement. And I myself have seen and testified that this is the Son of God. This seems to be John's faith statement. Even though John sees something, he doesn't quite understand it, but he's seen enough to declare that this one is the Christ. And then the next movement is in the text turns to John the Baptist's disciples. They follow Jesus, and it's at that point that Jesus speaks his very first words in John's gospel. A question. What are you looking for? What are you looking for? And the disciples follow with their own question. They don't answer, but ask a question right back. Where are you staying? Jesus has just asked this penetrating question. The would-be disciples follow with a question about Jesus' place of residence. What street do you live on? John's gospel is full of these strange responses to Jesus. People have great difficulty figuring out who Jesus is and what he's talking about. And yet maybe the question is not so strange. Where are you staying? Maybe their first fledgling attempt to figure Jesus out. I don't know about you, but back in Nebraska where I grew up, when we encountered a person who was obviously not a Nebraskan, we had asked, so where are you from? The assumption is that if you can discern someone's hometown, you knew who the person might be, at least knew something about them. Now, Mary, my wife, hates that question because she moved around a lot as a child. So when she's asked where she's from, she says the Midwest. born in Detroit, lived in Illinois, Kansas, back to Indiana. All this before she was in college. It's never really satisfactory to the people that are asking the question, because they want to know a town. Jesus responds to this strange question with an equally strange response. Come and see. Does he mean now that they should come and see where he's living? He'll show them the house that he's staying in, or that they should come and see who he is? Come and see what? Well, this is John. We're never quite sure. John doesn't tell us. He just sort of to see for ourselves and try to figure it out. With Jesus, there is mystery, ambiguity, distance between our perceptions of him and the reality. Pretty normal for John's gospel. But as I thought about it some more, I wondered if John's having Jesus with this message of come and see is not really the equivalent in other gospels as come, follow me. A couple of questioners were being asked to follow Jesus, invited by Jesus himself. And one little detail of the text here that may not be important is the order of the words of this phrase. One might expect the order to be see and then come. See who I am and then come and follow me. But here, the come precedes the see. So that what's implied is that these disciples should first come and follow Jesus, and only later maybe they will see who he is and the direction that he's headed. In a way, that's the way it is throughout the Gospel of John. The disciples stumble along after Jesus, and only later, along the way, as Jesus corrects their misunderstandings and challenges their misperceptions, do they gradually come to fuller epiphanies. Which leads me to ask the question, maybe the Christian faith is one of those experiences that, to really understand, you understand it from the inside out as a committed, active disciple, one following, and then only later gaining some measure of perception, understanding, seeing. And in doing so, along the way, getting it wrong, maybe as much or more than we get it right. Which leads me to a story that I heard this week, told by Dr. Tom Long, an author, professor, teacher of homiletics, about Martin Luther King, about Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Tom Long was in Alabama on the 25th anniversary of the march from Selma to Montgomery. The man who is the mayor of Selma, Alabama, at the time of the march, was still the mayor 25 years later in that city. And it was the mayor that stood on the platform during the remembrance of what happened 25 years earlier. And beside the mayor was former Governor George Wallace, this time in a wheelchair. And beside them were members of people who had marched in that march, now many of them aging and graying, perhaps John Lewis, one of them. And the mayor looked out over the crowd and said, and I quote, 25 years ago, Governor Wallace and I were wrong. We thought this was outside agitation. We did not know that it was the coming of justice. End quote. Now, Dr. Long thought it was remarkable that this governor had the humility to stand there and admit that he was wrong, that he didn't see it right, that he got it wrong. His perception was way off. But we are always seeing and not seeing, missing the signs of the times in the presence of Jesus among us. May we too have the humility to confess when we've missed the presence of Christ, when we've been on the wrong side of justice, and know that we can change. We can see in new ways. We can change our hearts and minds and be forgiven for all the times we've missed seeing Jesus among us. So the question I think that remains this morning with us is, as you look at Jesus, what do you see? Are you continuing to look and are you seeing new things? Now, I'm not the most observant person in the world, I will admit. I've finally come to the place in my life where most times after Mary gets a haircut, I notice. Not always. And sometimes I think I'm being real observant and say, oh, wow, I like that new top. And she said, I've had it for 10 years. It seems as if the invitation for us from John's Gospel is to keep asking the question of Jesus, even though it may seem strange. Jesus, where are you staying in the world? And to hear him respond back to us saying, come and see, come and see. PMC, come and see. See me in Perkasie. See me staying in Souderton, in Telford, in Quakertown, in Willow Grove, and wherever. You know there are many things I appreciate about this congregation. And one of them is that we continue to ask the questions of Jesus. It feels really sad that people might be attempting to model Jesus based only on what they learned about Jesus in Sunday school as a child. Perhaps their lives and worldview has changed in many ways, but their faith has not kept pace, and they continue to see Jesus, which was wonderful through the eyes of a child, but now no longer fits. And I invite us in this coming week to think back over your faith journey. Jessica and I, as a way of learning to know each other, have recently, in one of our mentoring sessions, decided to share our timeline with each other, the timeline of our life and faith. And of course, mine was long, several pages, and hers was relatively short, less than 30 years. But we made observations and asked questions about the influences and the things that shaped our lives and our faith from childhood on. But what we didn't do, what we might still do, is to ask each other how our perception of Jesus has changed over the years. You might want to do the same with a friend. Well, I'd be glad to sit with you as your pastor and invite you to think back on your earliest memories of your Christian experience. Maybe some of you can't even remember when you didn't count yourself as a follower of Jesus. But you might think of all those times along the ways where there have been little epiphanies or big ones, where you looked and you saw something new about your faith and your relationship with Christ. And my hunch is that some of those times are going to be good times, some of them are going to be really tough times. Because some of our greatest growth happens through some of the most difficult times of our lives. Perhaps even when we feel like nothing's happening in our relationship with Christ and we can't see Jesus at all. But ultimately, like those disciples, you came to see Jesus. You risk. You didn't know perhaps what this meant to follow Christ, but you on the journey. You decided to live your life in service, and you may have lacked much evidence of why you were following. Maybe you were doing it simply because it was a thing to do, or because your parents or pastor said you should. And perhaps there were days, even years, when you checked out of faith, decided to look at other things and follow other things. But more gradually, your eyes were opened more and more to who Jesus was and the depth of Christ's love for you. And you came and you saw, you followed and you saw. And your eyes are still being opened. Your eyes are being opened as you walk in the woods or as you sit with a child or grandchild. Your eyes are open through suffering, through a hymn or maybe even a sermon, through the love of a spouse, a child, a grandchild, through your work or your play or your service. Don't you see? John says that very much like Jesus, these first disciples who came to Jesus, they saw, they came, they saw. That same dynamic continues in your life and mine and in our life together as a congregation. We grow closer to Christ and Christ comes closer to us. May we day by day come and may we moment by moment see the living Christ as we sing, Christ before us, Christ behind us, Christ under our feet, Christ within us, Christ over us, let all around us be Christ. Amen.